Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Talked a little bit about the David Wright ceremony and Francisco Lindor seemingly going to be the next captain after a video leaked that was basically saying that. The torch being passed from David Wright as they do the number retirement and then Lindor getting the captaincy. And if this does happen, which we're assuming that it does, I think it's awesome, and I think he is totally deserving. It doesn't feel like a forced thing at all. We saw his leadership last year and the previous year. When he first got here, it was tough. It was tough sledding. I think he had to get used to the market, used to the fans, used to everything. He had the whole thumbs down thing going on with Javi Baez, but ever since that, he's been exactly the player that we wanted to get from Cleveland in that trade, and there are few people that really earn that C. Now, I don't know, because, and I only would think of this because of stuff you said about like Aaron Judge and Juan Soto and the contract. Like, I wonder if the money that Juan Soto got this offseason and Francisco Lindor being here and being like number two in the MVP race last year, that this captaincy and giving it to him right after they signed Juan Soto to this massive deal, had something to be like, listen, we love you, we respect you, you're still our leader. Just because this guy's making $750 million doesn't mean we don't love you too.
Yeah, I would just say that all the players in all the sports want every player to get as much money as they possibly can. Because as we always often talk about, rising tides lift all boats. And that's exactly what every player should be doing. So I would have never paid Juan Soto that kind of money. But the fact that the Mets did, that's great for not only Juan Soto, but it's great for the rest of the players in the league. And when Paul Skeens comes up for a contract or Scooble comes up for a contract, I mean, these guys are all going to benefit from what the Mets just did. And, you know, that's it's one thing to spend the money on Shohei Ohtani, because he's a pitcher and he's a hitter and he's a great baseball
international
player,
superstar.
International superstar. That's one thing. It's another thing to, you know, do what the Mets did and basically take him away from the Yankees and pay him that insane contract. But that's exactly what you want. But there is no question that the unquestioned leader on this team seems to be Francisco Lindor, especially over the last 2 years. So, yeah, I mean, it feels right to me. I think it feels right to everybody in that clubhouse. And interestingly, I don't know if you listened to Sal talking to Terry Collins yesterday.
I heard the beginning of it. I didn't get a chance to listen to the whole thing.
It was good. I didn't know this story, and neither did Sal, and I'm glad that Terry told it, that he went to David Wright saying, I want you to be the captain of the team, and David initially turned it down. Mm. And then came back to Terry, I guess, a day later and said, look, let me just talk to my teammates first, and let me see what they think, because that's the kind of guy that David Wright is. Mm. So I guess David took a little bit of a poll and spoke to a couple of his teammates. And once he got, you know, comfortable with the fact that the teammates were not going to hold it against him or didn't think that he was, you know, separating himself from the team, he accepted the captaincy. And that's the way you got to do it. That's the right way to do it.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, and that's what made him the captain was the selflessness or the non-selfishness that he possessed. So, yeah, I mean, I that's going to be a great day there and at Citi Field on Saturday. And I know that the Mets fans are going to be just basking in it.
You know, it's just too bad that David had those back problems. And again, Terry Collins told a story yesterday, you know, about David playing with a bad back, but he was hitting so well and his average was above 300. Like Terry said, nobody ever thought there was anything wrong until he finally went to the trainers, and the trainers figured out that he did have a back problem and an issue, and that unfortunately curtailed a career that could have probably won another 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and he also, I heard Jerry talking about the story that Terry Collins told, and I remember there being like rumors about this, and the story had gotten out a little bit back in the day, but Terry Collins had a rule that everybody needed to be in the dugout at the beginning of the game. Like, everybody who was in uniform had to be in the dugout at the beginning of the game. And, you know, David Wright's the captain at this point. He's looking around, and there's no Noah Syndergaard. And he wasn't pitching that day, but you just had to be there. That was one of his rules. And Noah Syndergaard was doing a signing, I guess, before the game that the Mets had asked him to do.
The PR staff.
Yes. So he's in the clubhouse eating a sandwich, and David Wright goes and finds him. And he goes, what are you doing? You know, you got to be in here. And Noah Syndergaard goes, well, you guys had lunch. I had to do the signing that the team asked me to do, so I'm eating a sandwich. And David Wright took the sandwich and threw it out and said, get your ass in the dugout. I was like, wow. You know, I mean, I had heard rumors of that story back in the day, but the fact that Terry Collins told it, I mean, that's just, you know, it's the little things. You know, it's the no loose ends. You're not bigger than anybody.
I'm right there with what David did there. I just, you know, I'm trying to think how old Noah Syndergaard must have been at that time.
Probably young.
Like his first or second year, maybe?
Yeah. It's probably not just the sandwich thing. There might have been other things that had led to that reaction.
Some
you
of
know?
These guys just aren't aware of things that they're doing and how it affects everything.
Yeah.
A captain is aware.
Sure.
The real thing, you know, that a captain can do, and I think Aaron Judge does it really well for the Yankees, is you just lead by example. Just, you don't always have to say something. You just go out there, you go about your business, you do your work, everybody sees how much effort you're putting into it, and then you'd like the thing that you're dragging the rest of your teammates with you. And every time you hear a Yankee player talking about Aaron Judge, that's exactly what they're saying about him. And hopefully that's what the Met player in that dugout feels about Francisco Lindor now.
Oh, I think absolutely.
But what happens if, you know, Juan Soto dogs it out of the, you know, batter's box a few times?
Well, I mean,
then can your $350 million man say something to your $760 million man?
Yeah, not like that. Not like the David Wright, Noah Syndergaard conversation or throwing something away. No, I don't think that works. I think there's a way to talk about it, like Mendoza to say something or Francisco Lindor to say something, but it's certainly not going to be aggressive.
You know how people talked about Juan Soto's body language.
Mm.
He looked unhappy. He looked distant. You know, when you pay somebody that much money, you're thinking you're buying their happiness and you're buying their, you know, their loyalty and their effort and their energy and everything else. And, you know, he's a human being like everybody else. So he gets off to a bad start and the body language experts start coming out. Everybody starts talking about the frowns on his face. Where's that smile? Where's that guy that does the slide in the batter's box? And I think when you spend that kind of money on somebody that has done something somewhere else and hasn't done it for you yet, those expectations are there. And there's one team right now that's getting ready to do this to two players, and that's Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner. Because Aaron Glenn's going to run a tough camp, and he needs his two best players to be in line. Like, they have to be – they can't be bitching and complaining about contracts. They've got to be able to – you know, take the criticism from the coach after the team just bucked up when they didn't have to. This is unprecedented what the Jets did with these two kids. So I think that's, you know, what they expect from those two players is to be leaders and to take whatever criticism or whatever tough coaching that Aaron Glenn's going to be bringing to them. I would hope that Francisco Lindor would accept the captaincy with that type of responsibility as well.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're getting excited about what should be the actual home run derby that took place during the All-Stars game, the almost All-Stars game? Come on, you got to give me a break here. Baseball could do better than that. What a waste of time that exhibition was last night. Almost All-Stars game, you're going to get excited about it? A game that means nothing, that ends in a tie, and has this silly swing-off that people are going nuts about. Now, you want to say you were entertained by it? So be it. If you love it that much and you think it's so great for the game, then why don't they implement that instead of the ghost runner at second base in extra innings? Why don't we see that in the postseason? I'll tell you why. Because it's a gimmick that is an All-Stars game nonsensical thing. And that, if you get excited about the, well, three swings, three outs, ooh, the drama, that's what the home run derby should be. Baseball is at times like the Yankees, you know, playing your best second baseman at third base. Major League Baseball played their best home run derby during the All-Star game. They should have done that the night before. And how are you going to take it so seriously when the best participants on each team aren't even involved for multiple reasons? Booney had an answer for it after the game last night. Hey, why the heck, when you come down to a swing-off to win American League, National League, with so much on the line, and you know what that so much on the line is? Bonuses, player bonuses, the same stuff that everybody got mad at Juan Soto for. What do you think these players want to win the game for? Pride for the American League or National League? Please, spare me. They want whatever the bonus is that they're getting for the winning team. So, Aaron, why the heck wouldn't you have Aaron Judge in this thing? Well, these decisions were predetermined on Monday, who they were going to have for their swing-off, the swing-off participants. And guys have travel plans after the All-Star game. Hey, all right, I'm going to play 2-3 innings, get 2-3 at-bats, see ya, talk to the media real quick, and then I'm going on vacation for a couple of days. I mean, that's what goes on, which is fine. I have no issue with it. It's an exhibition game. But then don't tell me that, oh, it's so great for the game of baseball. The swing-off. What drama. You know, it seems to me more people that follow baseball care about the World Baseball Classic and the swing-off than the actual games that matter. As Shohei himself, who said yesterday on the red carpet, another worthless endeavor at the almost All-Stars game, Shohei Ohtani on the red carpet talking about how he had more fun playing in the WBC than the actual World Series. What? What are we doing? So if players and a lot of fans love the worthless baseball classic and get all into the almost All-Stars game and the swing-off, then maybe we should just make a league. Instead of having teams that represent each city, we have teams that represent the countries. And you could have swing-offs throughout those games. Then maybe baseball will be getting to something here. Maybe that can make the regular season more impactful. But come on, guys. How are we going to take that seriously last night? You're going to take that exhibition that seriously and be that into it when even with the results not mattering, even with the entertainment that could be provided with the quote-unquote swing-off, you didn't even have the best participants. Booty had a guy in there I never heard of before. Who is that third guy going for the American League on the Rays? What, are you kidding me? Who is this guy? He's going to be one of your swing-off participants? That's going to go up against Schwarber and Alonso? Come on, man. And that's supposed to be the crown jewel of the almost All-Stars game? Oh, and then some of the other popular talk is this. Well, baseball's All-Stars game is so much better than the other sports. That's the measuring stick? That's the measuring stick? Come on. Those other All-Star games, the Pro Bowl, whatever you want to call them, they're worthless. They are absolutely worthless. So Major League Baseball's almost All-Stars game is a little better than totally worthless. It's almost worthless. Okay. I mean, I guess if that's what we want to hang your hat on, but goodness gracious, you watch that game, joke's on you. I'm not going to get sucked into that nonsense. That was a waste of time. However long that game took, you're staying up. I was in bed, nice, fast asleep. Watch a couple episodes of The Bear, call it a night. Glad I did. Swing off. Come on. The swing off was a home run derby. For the young kids who got into that, hey, that's what home run derbies used to be. Forget this clock nonsense and everybody running around. You can't even follow pitch after pitch, and it's ridiculous. That's what the home run derby used to be. Here you go. You get 10 swings or 10 outs. See what you can do with it. That way you could actually get this. Follow what the bleep is going on. Here's the pitch. There's the swing. Is it gone? Is it an out? And keep the count going. Also, guys don't get gassed midway through the home run derby. So I think baseball is onto something. They stumbled across it. Just like it took them, you know, 6 years or whatever to go back to the original uniforms. What a brilliant concept. I mean, yeah, Manfred belongs in the Hall of Fame. I'm with you, A-Rod. Manfred and his staff, they belong in the Hall of Fame for coming up with a brilliant idea to have players wear the team's jersey that they will be representing in the almost All-Stars game. Brilliant. And now they stumbled across another genius idea. The swing-off, it's almost like that would be the better version of the Home Run Derby. Oh, man, baseball, just really brilliant here. Not to mention that the MVP thing is a total farce. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan, BT on vacation. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. I mean, it's not bad enough that it was the almost All-Stars game. Then you know how these things work. It's all predetermined. This guy will get an inning. This guy's going to pitch here. I want to get everybody in the game. We know it's only going to be nine innings because the game really doesn't matter. So it'll end in a tie. We'll go to the swing off, take the best players out of the game. Nobody's really trying to win the game. And even in the swing off where everything's on the line, three swings for each participant in the swing off of the almost All-Stars game, whoever's in the clubhouse is available. And that's not Judge or it's not Ohtani. You know, those guys have predetermined plans, which is great. But then don't tell me how great the swing off is. It's a joke. Mike is in Oceanside. What's up, Mike?
Man, oh, man. For someone who didn't watch the game, you got a lot to say.
Well, I'm prepared as always, Mike. Are you surprised?
No, not that. You're a consummate pro. You watched the game.
No, I boycotted. I told you I was boycotting yesterday. No Soto, no Sal. Did you watch?
I watched it. I thought it was great. Yeah. I thought that whole ending was great.
So you liked it. You liked the swing off.
Loved it.
Yeah. Who was the guy for the American League that hit third in the swing off? Can you tell me his name? Because I'm not familiar with it.
The guy who hit third?
Yeah. Booney chose three players.
No, I can't tell you.
Me neither. Me neither. But at least I have a reason. I boycotted the game. You watched it and you don't even know who it is. Point is, how can you get that excited about it, Mike, when you didn't even have the best participants in it? Just like the Home Run Derby. Didn't have the best participants in it. Last night, and they swing off all the marbles on the line. National League, American League. Ooh, the drama. Where's Judge? I don't know. He's traveling on his vacation. Where's Ohtani? I don't know. He's out of here.
They had Alonso in.
Yeah, well,
he just didn't get in there.
Yeah, because Pete didn't start, so Pete was Pete comes in the game a little bit later, and he stayed throughout. I mean, I don't know if that's a personal thing where Pete wanted to stay, or maybe he didn't have travel plans to get out of there. Maybe he wanted to hang around until the end. Who knows? But I do think it had something to do with he got in the game later than obviously Judge, who started the game. And
gotcha.
Look, if you liked it, Mike, that's fine. I boycotted the game, and I put it this way: when I woke up, I felt good about boycotting the almost All-Stars game last night. Now, I did it for a reason. I told you, I wanted to watch the game. I just can't get behind Major League Baseball if they don't have the best players in what I used to call the All-Star game, in what has now become the almost All-Stars game. Can't be the All-Star game without all the stars. Almost All-Stars game, as I spell it out for you. No Soto, no Sal. I woke up this morning. Now, I got a little bit of texting last night. I tried to avoid it. Matter of fact, when I finally got to sit down on the couch last night at like 9 p.m., which is way too late anyway. You get home, you got to clean this, clean that, take this out, do that, put the daughter to sleep, make sure the dog is fed, blah, 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 blah. By the time I finally sat down on the couch, like 9 o'clock, and I'm like, all right, what are we going to watch? And my wife goes to put on the TV. We get YouTube TV. And I hear the almost All-Stars game. And I go, shut off. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. Boycott it. She's like, what? What's wrong with you? She doesn't know about the No Soto, No Sal. Boycotting. I don't want to see it. And then we put on the bear, whatever. We got to that. Now, I was getting some texts. A couple of group texts sent me the polar bear emoji. And then a couple of people talk about Alonso, MVP. And then I saw a little bit on social media. So that's how I was following it a little bit as it was happening, I guess, on social media. But I did not watch the game, not a second of the game. And then this morning, I woke up, read about it, and I watched the condensed version, which took like 20 minutes. So who's the sucker? You, who spent, what, 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours, however long it went? Whatever time it ended? Or me, who caught up on everything in just 20 condensed minutes from the meaningless, almost All-Stars game? Eddie is on Long Island. Eddie?
Hey, what's going on?
How are you, Eddie?
Good. I'm like you, man. I boycotted that All-Star game.
There we go, Eddie. I like it.
All right. But I jumped on the air. I want to hear, what do you mean by this almost all-star game?
Well, Soto wasn't involved. So it can't be an all-star game if it's it was almost all-stars. Almost all the stars participated. No Soto, no Sal, not really an all-star game. Because it can't be all-stars, Eddie, and thank you for the call, and I'm glad you boycotted along with me. When you say all-star game, that implies all the stars of the game participated, right? So, I mean, I can't call it that. You can call it whatever you want. I can't call it that. It was the almost all-stars game. They had a lot of stars there. Many stars there. Not all stars there. Almost all-stars. Anthony's in Toms River, New Jersey. What's up, Ant?
Hey, Sal. How you doing today?
Good, Ant. How are you?
Good. You know, I used to love the All-Star game as a kid. I'm 38. I remember, the All-Star game in Fenway and, in Safeco Field for Cal Ripken's last game. Somewhere along the line, I just felt like I lost so much interest. I mean, to me, this is not a very complex thing. If you're going to fix the All-Star game, number one for me, not every team needs a representative because there are better players that are not getting chosen because they have to choose people from other teams. And I don't know if players are going to do this, but the starter nine need to play the whole game. Like Aaron Judge and Ohtani should be in the game. And if you are going to have this swing-off, which I'm not crazy about, Ohtani versus Judge, it's that simple. I mean, if you do all those things to me, at least I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, well, I mean, those things would make it more interesting, and I don't think you're going to go back to those days, and thank you for the call. The starters should play the majority of the game. That's how it used to be. The starters played the majority of the game because the game used to matter. Matter what? What was on the line? Pride was on the line. National League versus the American League. I'm sure there were some bonuses involved. I don't know that to be factual, but it was more so about pride. You know, I hate to go back to the 80s or 90s or whatever, but obviously now players all love each other. The leagues are intertwined, so it's not about pride versus National League and American League. There is no such thing anymore. It's all interleague, so they got to figure that out, and eventually they will, probably after there's a lockout or a strike or whatever it may be in a year or so, and we'll have to be dealing with that nonsense from Major League Baseball yet again. Hey, baseball may have the better almost all-stars game than everybody else. They also lock out and strike better than anybody else. Nobody hits you in the face with a lockout like Major League Baseball does. So we're all anticipating that. But there are ways to make it more interesting, and that would be one. Look, it's bottom line, it's all about competition. So to me, that's what sports are about, competition. We talk about this with the NBA. We could talk about this with Major League Baseball. Whatever it may be, it's about competition. And in the NBA, one of the reasons why we critique the regular season is because you can't tell me that they're trying to win every game if they're resting their best players. So whatever night you're resting your best player, it's clearly not about competition that night. Major League Baseball. If you're pulling out your starter because of a pitch limit or an innings limit in the fifth or sixth inning, it's not about competition that night. It's about preserving him. So your priority is not winning the game, which is what sports is supposed to be about. Winning the game, competition. Your priority, obviously you want to win the game, sure, but your priority is either resting players or trying to prevent injury. So it's not about the true competition. And in the almost all-star game, the last thing it's about is competition. Yeah, sure, they want to win. They're not trying to win. If you were trying to win, would you pitch Paul Skeens just one inning? Would you take Aaron Judge out after just two at-bats? You wouldn't. So you can't tell me that they're not really trying to win. They're not prioritizing winning. Therefore, there is no competition. Therefore, to me, it's a clear exhibition that you might as well have Savannah Bananas running out there. Cue the music. Where are the yellow balls? Hey, I got a way to make it more entertaining. Have every foul ball that's hit in the stands, if it's caught, it's an out. Steal it from the Savannah Bananas. That'll make it more interesting in the almost all-stars game for Major League Baseball. Not to mention the blatantly obvious. If you're going based off of the swing, what do you call it? The swing derby, whatever the hell it's called there. The swing-off. Swing-off. That's time now for a swing-off. That's just a genius name. The almost all-star game swing-off. Hey, where's Judge? Somebody want to get Judgy in here? Oh, sorry, Skip. He's on the plane. And actually, it wasn't even that. Like, I wish it was like that. That would be funnier. It was predetermined. On Monday, Aaron Boone knew, okay, well, Judge's going to be out after. Like, all this stuff. Yankees predetermined stuff anyway. But especially in the almost All-Stars game, everybody's doing it. This guy will pitch this inning, this inning. Like, it's all mapped out. It's Boone's dream. Everybody's got their lanes, including the players. Not just the pitchers. All right, Judge, he's going to give us two at-bats. He's going to be on his plane wherever he's going. Lindor's going to give his two at-bats. He's going to go visit his family and spend time with his parents. Like, and that's, I'm not knocking the players. That's great. Good for them. They should get time off. It's a long, grueling season. But then don't tell me about how great the Major League Baseball almost All-Stars game is. You don't have your best players in the game. That's a fact. And then even during the game, you don't have your best players that got selected aren't playing throughout. And you expect me to go nuts about it or care about it? Come on. You screw up the home run derby with the clock and nobody can follow what the hell's going on. Guys are getting gassed. Not to mention they don't have the best home run hitters in it. And then the best version of the home run derby we saw in the swing off. Even without the best participants possible. Amado is calling from, or how do you say your name? Amadeo. There you go. Amadeo from Staten Island. What's on your mind, buddy?
Sal, I feel like that Pete Alonso was robbed of his thunder yesterday because he hit that home run, that three-run homer, and they just, all of a sudden, the Padres pitchers just messed that whole game up.
Oh, you get Diaz, just, too. You can't leave Diaz out of it. I know it was an infield grounder.
Yeah, but Suarez comes in, and come on, Diaz, it wasn't his fault.
He did give up the tying run. I mean, you can't absolve him of that. He gave up the ground to the Kwan there, allowing the tying run to score.
But did you see, like, even from the first Padres pitcher, that guy, mm-hmm. Morjon, whatever his name is,
he
comes in with a 6-0 lead, and he just botched that whole thing. And Alonso had, I'm like saying, you know, I love the All-Star game. I always loved the All-Star game. I'm saying, finally, a Met is having the glory in our All-Star game, and the thunder gets stolen from him by who else? A Philly. You know, it's crazy.
I didn't even think about it that way.
He was the only Philly, I think, that made it, too.
I didn't even think about it that way, Amadeo, and thank you for the call. Now, you stole my thunder with the Alonso stuff, but guess what we're going to do? We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to talk about Pete Alonso not winning the All-Star Game MVP, and we'll continue with your calls. 888-808-1019. Just getting started on this Wednesday morning. We got a lot planned for you today. Remember, we talked about starting to talk about David Wright and his retirement, so we should do that. Some special guests on the show today scheduled as well.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You like the internet.
I do.
The old internet.
Unless I shouldn't.
Well, this is Mets related.
Okay.
All right. So, and again, we'll continue to take your calls, 888-808-1019. We see you guys there. This weekend, of course, on Saturday, the Mets are retiring the number 5 forever. David Wright's number will be retired at Citi Field. It'll hang right up next to all those wild card champion banners. It'll live up there forever, the number 5. David Wright will join.
That was a troll, Tommy.
I wanted to catch, see if Tommy was paying attention. David Wright will join Sal on Friday. And in about an hour from now, Tommy will give us his third favorite David Wright moment of all time as we continue the countdown down. It's going to be a really fun weekend in Metland. A lot of special guests have come in. We heard Terry Collins on with Sal earlier. So Major League Baseball today put out a video on Twitter and I think other social media platforms, basically with great moments from great Met captains throughout. You know, Keith Hernandez is included there. Tommy, you saw the whole video.
Yeah, it was Keith, Gary Carter, John Franco, David Wright.
David Wright.
And then you want me to keep going?
Yeah,
and
go ahead.
Go ahead.
So about, now this video has been since deleted. They're showing all the Met captains, and then they get to David Wright. This is about halfway through the video, maybe a minute and a half or so. After the David Wright highlights, you start seeing Francisco Lindor highlights.
He's not a captain.
And then at the end of the video, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, you hear Ron Darling say, well, if the team and Mendy want to put the C on his chest, blah, 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 blah. So the idea here, at least where my brain went, this is where my brain went. Francisco Lindor is about to be the next captain of the Mets. They're going to do it on Saturday on David Wright Day, and David Wright is going to pass the baton to Lindor.
Interesting.
Okay. All right, hold on. Let's take a timeout and break this all down.
Okay.
A video has been now scrubbed by Major League Baseball themselves.
Right. This isn't the Mets.
Isn't the Mets.
This isn't some intern with the Mets screwing this up. This is Major League Baseball.
All right. And we had Mendy on preseason, was this?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
And the topic of Lindor being named captain came up. And I forget the exact answer, but Mendy
basically said he's already the captain. He doesn't need it.
And didn't we leave that interview thinking that at some point by the end of spring training, Lindor would be officially named captain? And then it never happened.
And also, Lindor was on with BT and Sal, and the idea of becoming captain was also brought up with Francisco. So this is a topic that has been discussed a bunch here on the station.
And what did he say?
I'm going to go dig that back up. I'm going to get with Hoff and get what he said.
So before we kind of explain any more, let me just first by saying the most obvious thing in the world. Francisco Lindor absolutely deserves to be the captain of the New York Mets.
Yeah,
he virtually already is anyway.
Right. I think it's a role that he fits naturally. He talks after every game. He never hides from the media. He gives a measured response about anything and everything that's going on with this team. He acts like the captain. And by the way, he's pretty damn good.
He is. And he's all smiles, as you saw last time when he got introduced, Mr. Smiles. It's the perfect choice. He should have already been named captain.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have an issue if this conspiracy theory is true.
Why?
Saturday's about David Wright.
Okay.
Hold on. Francisco Lindor could have been named captain with his own press conference at the beginning of the year, any point throughout. I remember the time when Jeter got named captain, there was a special press conference. I understand like the coolness of Wright kind of passing the baton. I understand the symmetry there. I look at this. You ever be at a wedding and somebody else gets engaged at the wedding?
What? No.
This is a thing.
Has this ever?
What? Yes, this happened. This happens sometimes where maybe it's like the brother.
I've never heard of it.
Friends, somebody will drop to a knee and, you know, love is in the air and their planned engagement was at somebody else's wedding.
Did the wife know about this?
It's happened a bunch. I've seen it online.
Okay, I need further details.
Further details.
We'll punt that for now.
Punt it for now. I'm just saying this has happened. Tommy, I'm not crazy. This has happened, right? You know what I'm talking about.
I've never seen it personally, but it sounds about right.
It sounds right. Okay. I always look at that when it happens and I go.
Or they announce a pregnancy. They do something to upstage the wedding.
Right.
And the point is, I always find that to be like a little rude. Like it's those people's day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. I understand love's in the air. Your family might be around. You want to do that. David Wright is the ultimate. He never, the team player, never asked for anything. And I'm sure he'd be totally fine with this moment. I'm sure he's even stamped his approval on it. But as an organization, you're doing something awesome. This whole buildup, I don't think you need the Lindor add-on. Just have David have his own day.
Have you ever met David Wright?
Yeah, and he's the ultimate. He wouldn't care.
And you've had conversations with him?
One conversation, yeah.
He is the most humble,
no doubt,
like iconic player that I can think of in this New York area.
Which is what makes him great for New York.
He doesn't even look at himself as great as he is. And so I don't want to say he's embarrassed by this, but I don't think he's like, look at me, I'm getting my number retired. That's not his personality. And in fact, I think he would relish passing along this unbelievable honor and hope that at some point Francisco Lindor has his number hung from the rafters. I think this is something that David Wright would actually welcome. I don't think it matters that it takes away in fans' minds from his day.
All right, let me take a different route to explain this.
Go ahead.
I am not suggesting that David Wright would be upset by this. I'm not even suggesting that he wouldn't be excited to do it. All I'm saying is everything you said about David Wright is right, but it's almost like you're taking advantage of his humbleness and everything. All this guy has put on the line, his body, everything with the organization. Can he just have a day, even if he's embarrassed by it or everything, where it's just about him? Because the story
but
that we all wake up to...
He doesn't seek the spotlight.
He doesn't, and I understand that, but just let him. Like, that's part of it. Like, just have his day.
Or are you forcing him to be uncomfortably in the spotlight?
So you think this would be a way of he didn't want this anyway, so it kind of takes
I don't think he minds it. It's not that he doesn't want it. It's just, it's pomp and circumstance. And
okay.
So he's not a pomp and circumstance guy. Fawn over me. Look at me. Applaud me. That's just not who he is. Some guys love that. Adulation. Like some people love, some athletes love adulation. It's almost everything they do is so that people will look at them and clap at them and pat them on the back and lift them up and it makes them feel really good.
Yeah, like
David Wright doesn't need that.
Yeah, Terrell Owens would not go for this.
Right.
That's a perfect example.
Right. That's exactly. It's a great example.
again, I don't think David Wright would be anti this. I just think from the Mets' point of view, I understand why all the symmetry work, and I understand why Mets fans would like it. I just look at objectively.
I think Mets fans are more on your side, though. I think Mets fans would be more upset.
The thing I always observed about David Wright, on top of the humbleness or everything, is this man, for a baseball player, quite literally put his body, his back, all of that on the line. And for one day, you have been pumping this day up. Can the day just be for him, even if he's awkward about it or uncomfortable for it? Because we know as much as anybody, when we go on those microphones on Monday after David Wright Day, one of the big topics above David Wright in the speech he had is going to be Francisco Lindor has been named Met captain immediately, almost immediately, just like anybody who would have walked out of a wedding where somebody else got engaged.
But what if it's David Wright announcing it?
I'm sure it will be.
Right. What if it's David Wright talking about the importance and imparting his experience as captain onto Francisco Lindor?
That'll be cool, but it'll immediately be the afterthought. All anybody will talk about is that Lindor's the captain.
It'll be, how amazing was that, that David Wright just handed this unbelievable, unique honor to Francisco Lindor, and we all sat there and watched it. And yes, his number is stuck in the rafters. Put up into the rafters. But I think it's just an add-on because it now ties David Wright back to this iteration of this Mets team and this Mets like belief that they're going to be a World Series champion at some point.
It would be cool. I'm a big believer in when it's somebody's day, just let the day be about them. Even if they didn't ask for it, even if that's not their personality, and maybe my wedding, getting engaged thing, announcing a pregnancy thing is not the right comp, but that's the best way to make it to regular people. Now, Tommy, just before you give an answer, I just want to reset for anybody maybe getting in the car wondering what the hell we're talking about. We don't know this definitively, but Major League Baseball leaked a video or put out a video that they have since taken off social media where it was the legacy of all Met captains and it ended with Francisco Lindor and some kind of comment on it. So many now, the internet theories are running wild that this weekend Francisco Lindor will be named captain. Now, Tommy, you're the Met fan.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think that a lot of the build-up to David Wright's day is part of the day. And if they do this, you know, passing of the torch at the end of the ceremony, I think that's just the cherry on top of what is just this unbelievable moment. They haven't had a lot of captains. They've had four captains. So it's a big deal. And I think David Wright is the kind of guy, and Francisco Lindor is the type of guy you're talking about. And Lindor, I know it got off to a rocky start, but these are now two of the most beloved Mets of all time. And I think that just only adds to the moment. Like, I'm a wrestling fan, so a guy wins a title, that's a great moment. But I think you could add to it by the history. I'm sure, obviously, Keith will be there. Frank will be there. Gary Carter, unfortunately, can't be. But I think that would be such a cool moment to have. Now I got to call you out for being a little bit of a hypocrite.
All right, sure, go for it.
And by the way, I was on Sean's side with this, and perhaps we'll speak to this guy at Giants camp, because I'm cool with it if LT was cool with it and his family. You wanted Abdul Carter to get Lawrence Taylor's number.
Sure.
And my take on that was, if LT's cool with it, or if it's a player that's deceased, if their family's cool with it, who am I to say anything? If David Wright wants this and he's okay with this, then I'm cool with it, because this is David's day and he can spend and do the day however he wants.
I know where you're going, but I think it's very apples and oranges. If on the day LT was getting his number retired, we had a rookie go, hey, while this number's going up, can I wear it?
I think
that'd be like a little different.
My point is that you're saying that this should be sacred, and a lot of people think numbers that are retired are sacred.
Francisco Lindor being named Mets captain is something that clearly has been in the works and discussed. David Wright is around enough in Metland. Why at the end of spring training, or dare I say maybe the opening day ceremonies, why couldn't we do a David Wright passing of the baton at any one of those points? Why does it have to be on the day he gets his number retired?
We don't know that this is happening.
We don't. We're speculating because this is what the internet's
doing. This is pure speculation. Correct. Because of a leaked, or not a leaked, an erroneously posted video by MLB that had David Wright and all the other captains before him, and then also included Francisco Lindor, who is not currently a captain, at least officially.
Yes, so it's all speculation.
And the other
side. But if this happened again, Tommy, if this happened again, like, David Wright is around. You could have done this at any other cool moment.
I agree. But would it have meant?
I think so. I think if you ended opening day ceremonies this year, by the way, David Wright's going to come out and say a few words.
Maybe they weren't ready to do it.
We're ready to do it. You're doing it in July? What was the difference?
After the All-Star break.
Okay. All right. Well, Tommy,
it's a reset of the season.
Jeez.
When we talked to Mindy about it at the beginning of the season, everybody was, I think, okay with Francisco Lindor being thought of, possibly named a captain, but it didn't feel like everybody was on board with it. It just felt kind of premature to be, you know what I mean?
No, like, that was the sense we got too, because he didn't definitively say it and almost felt like they were, but maybe this is why they were hiding it, because they always had this in their plans for this
possibly
day.
Exactly.
Possibly.
I think they've been planning it for months. I think that Mendy might have known about it. I think Lindor might have known about it. I don't know if I could say it on the air, but there's some things that make me believe that Lindor perhaps have knew about this before the season started. I'll just kind of leave it at that. And I think this is just a great moment. I do. I think that you have an opportunity now on a big stage, on a big game. Like, this is a game that a lot of Met fans have circled the calendar for. Evan is flying back from Florence or wherever he is to make sure he's back for this game. So I think this is the perfect time to do it.
He could have come back on Sunday. Instead, he's coming back Friday night or Saturday.
If Evan could come back tonight, he would.
One other thing I wanted to point out, because when I told you guys this off air, I think this was your reaction, and maybe some people out there might be thinking the same thing, that perhaps the people over at MLB or MLB.com think Lindor's already the captain.
Well, that's the only other answer.
But how many people go into making a video like this? Because it's always some intern tweeted it out.
No.
Yeah, but who put the video together?
Right. And it's going to live in a lot of ways on Mets.com.
And the line, maybe we could even play the line at the end with Ron Darling, to me, is ominous about putting the C on Lindor's chest. It's an obvious, like, Lindor's going to be the captain.
If you had to ask me, I lean that this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. I lean that that's the conspiracy. But I'm leaving all options open. And I think, unfortunately, Tommy, in today's day and age with companies, you are giving people too much credit to think that there can't be an oversight somewhere. Not that this happened here, but
it's like TV's
I can't give you an exact example, but I know we've sat here and something came out, some kind of video wise or anything, and it's quickly like, what the hell did they think that this was what's going on? I know that's happened in my
brain. Then they could say, hey, the reason we deleted this video is because we made a mistake. We thought he was already the captain. This feels like a oops, like maybe somebody scheduled the video to go out on Saturday and it accidentally went out on Wednesday, which is
what time did it go out?
Let me see.
Because I'm seeing now on our SNY coverage, the coverage begins 3 p.m. Saturday.
Where it's living on Twitter right now, it's 1:02 p.m.
Right,
but that's not when the video was tweeted out. So you figure a little bit before that.
Yeah, so that wouldn't even time out with, you know, you're figuring that video has to come out like 4:30 or whatever on Saturday. So I was just saying, if it came out at a symmetry time, I could get behind the scheduled date was wrong or something like that.
You would think that they would do this before, not in real time. They'd want people to be anticipating.
No, I think you want the surprise pop. Because if people are anticipating that, then it only further takes away from the David Wright stuff. If that's how the ceremony ends, then at least...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I got you.
If the whole thing is...
So we're not supposed to know about this, and then at the end it happens, and we're like, oh my God!
Yes.
Wow, Francisco Lindor is handed the captaincy by David Wright.
Am I nuts, or didn't the Mets... Didn't they have like a surprise number retirement at the end of a ceremony we didn't see coming? Am I nuts? Like a couple.
This
years
is where
ago?
We need Evan.
I know
my brain doesn't.
Where everybody
like
walked
this.
Away and that was.
I should have just
topic.
Come to work.
You should have just come to work.
Yeah, he should have.
Somebody will correct me on Twitter or call in. Where like that was the big surprise at the end of it was about something else and something. Maybe it was when Willie Mays had his number retired.
I was just thinking Willie Mays. So we're on the same wavelength there. I think it might have been Willie Mays, just because my brain went there, yours went there as
well.
But this
is
we'll look
just,
it up.
Look, you can get on the Mets for a lot of things, and I'm sure the ceremony Saturday is going to be wonderful. The buildup's going to be great. But I can't shake loose that this is the same organization, albeit under different ownership, that had the closing of Shea after a baseball game instead of before, that they lost, and the whole thing was like
kind of a
messed up and screwed up.
You know, so tough spot for Piazza and Seaver.
Forgive me if I don't give the organization sometimes the benefit of the doubt in maybe overthinking certain ceremonies and how they handle things.
It's a completely different organization.
I know it is.
Different owner, different people.
But you could have done this right to Lindor Piscitelli.
Now you're throwing the LOL Mets thing back.
I don't want to do LOL Mets because it's a great week.
This is not LOL Mets.
Look, Met fans, call up then. 888-808-1019.
Should we have done a spoiler alert before this?
We're
just speculating.
We are just speculating. Right?
Meaning not everybody lives on the internet. This is purely
people,
speculation.
People are speculating about this on social media.
Oh, big time. It's gone viral.
It's huge.
No, it's huge. Yeah.
It's our job to convey news and gossip that's going on and entertain you. This is the talk of the internet. 888-808-1019. Vinny in Freehold. Vinny, what's up?
Hey, Vinny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you got, Budget, man?
Thanks for calling, dude.
I have four things I'll make them real quick. First off, I hope that we show up for David here on Saturday night, you know, play well. Second, Tommy, obviously I'm a Mets fan. I love that dig. I mean, finally we get to see a ball go over that fence that's not from Atlanta. You know, that was awesome. I was laughing with you. Third, Tiki, I don't know if it was the same year that you won the I think it was 96, the ACC Offensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, that's right. But, that's that year.
I was born and raised in Charlottesville, Virginia. You guys came to, you and your brother, Rondé, came to J.T. Henley Middle School, and
yeah.
I played.
Yeah, of
I
course.
Missed the bus.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
My mom had pit me up, man. She was pissed.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Yeah, I played the trumpet. I played the UVA fight song for you guys.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. I appreciate that.
Man. You know, I just, you know, moved up here to Jersey from Pittsburgh. But, I mean, you know, thanks for being genuine.
Thank
you know,
dude.
You and Howie both, you know.
Yeah,
I played football against Chris.
Yeah.
You know, I played football against Chris, which you know, wasn't nice.
But, that dude was
I
a
played,
monster.
I played baseball with him, so, you know. And, you know, thanks for, you know.
Oh, that's my pleasure, man.
Thanks, Vinny.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Vinny.
That's
for those that don't know, Howie Long moved right off of grounds in Charlottesville.
Okay.
So he was just off of basically where I lived. Howie bought this big, I think it was a schoolhouse, like this big, like old school. And that's where he raised his kids.
I didn't realize.
And so his kids went to school in Charlottesville. And
oh,
then,
wow.
I forget. Howie or not? Chris went to where did he go to school?
Chris Long. Chris Long wasn't a Virginia guy. Now I'm picturing him in that helmet.
No, he did. No, I'm thinking of what's his
brother? Kyle.
Kyle went to Oregon. That's right.
Yes.
Chris came right after me. Went to Virginia, but Kyle went to Oregon because we thought we were going to get him as well. He ended up going across the country. Maybe he ended up somewhere else too, but I think he went to Oregon. But they were like legends in the high school.
That's crazy.
The local high school community. Simply one because of their dad.
Yeah.
And then two, they were both monsters.
They're awesome. I can't believe you bought like a schoolhouse.
Yeah.
This isn't the one that Dr. Seuss bought or whatever you guys
No, that
were
was
about.
Up on the mountain.
Up on the mountain, yes.
It looked down on all the Who's in Whoville.
In Whoville. Okay.
Sound familiar?
Yeah. It's... By the way, Tiki, everybody in Virginia believed that he had me go home with that information, and it was not 100%.
It's true.
That's not what the internet says.
True. Urban legend.
Everything the internet says is the truth.
Just like Thomas Jefferson shipped in the capitals. Oh, you know, the Capitol is the top of a column, like the thing that sits on top, the beautiful ornate art. He bought it all in Italy. There was 100% tariff. Sound familiar?
I like to go to former president's boyhood homes.
Back in the day when he brought them in, so he labeled them school supplies.
Oh.
So he packaged them up, school supplies.
And that's how he got them.
And that's how he got them in.
And he didn't text us about NFL contracts in Italy.
No.
Texting wasn't even a thing.
We're talking about Francisco Lindor, whether or not he's going to get the C on his chest, possibly even on Saturday. And you think maybe even a Pete Alonso, why isn't he in the discussion to be the captain? Because you don't know if he's going to be here long term.
Right.
That's the problem. He could opt out. Yeah. He could be gone. It's hard to do
he's
that.
Not the captain.
Correct.
It's Lindor. Lindor Pete Alonso has not been that same
leader?
Locker room leader that Lindor has
been. I don't get the sense Pete would want to be. Pete, ironically, to bring this back to what we had talked about with a guy who just got traded, has a lot of Chris Kreider in him. People wondered why he wasn't named captain. Mm. He just, from all reports, he was kind of reluctant to want that role.
And he just does his job.
Exactly, and Pete does that. So, I think Lindor does scream more of the captain in that situation. I don't think Pete would take offense to this at all, in my opinion.
I don't either.
What about Juan Soto, you think?
He's
they give him the biggest contract ever.
Look.
Juan Soto is a leader because of how much he makes.
Exactly.
His money makes him one of their leaders, but he hasn't gotten there yet.
No doubt about it. And also, you got to make an all-star team, man.
But he did. People say he did leave the Yankees in part because it wasn't his team, and now it's going to be Lindor's team and not his team.
I don't believe that he left the Yankees because it wasn't his team.
And to be fair, baseball captaincy, if we want, this is not knocking.
But he's never been the captain. He's never been the man wherever he's been.
Wherever he's been.
He wasn't that in Washington. He wasn't even in San Diego. He wasn't the guy.
Yes. We, as Yankee fans, we've had Aaron Judge now as the captain, King Aaron Judge, and Derek Jeter's the captain. personally, I find captains in baseball to be the biggest crock of you.
No, because you're a hockey guy. That's why.
Yeah, it's just
your
different.
Hockey fandom.
And football,
is,
when you wear the C's.
Stop it. There's 15,000 captains in the football. The Giants had 45 captains last
but
year.
But at least you're going out for the coin toss or whatever. Like, a baseball captain. I don't need baseball captains to be named.
Right.
So I don't look at, like, Juan Soto needing that.
You don't think that Derek Jeter being the captain does not add to Thurman Munson, didn't add to their legacy? Even David Wright. Like, you don't think that that captaincy adds to their
maybe
legacy?
Maybe for some. Doesn't add for me in baseball.
No, I think it does. I do. I think it adds to baseball.
Because it isn't as frequent.
Exactly. It's not an every year thing. It's not even an every decade thing in some cases.
No, it's rare.
It's very rare. And if you really have to earn it.
You know,
obviously
what?
With your play, but with who you are to that team and to that locker room, that clubhouse, I should say, and like it's not something you flippantly give.
El Capitan.
So it solidifies you as an iconic member of this team.
I can't disagree with that. I think probably because of what you just said is why I don't view it the same way. The fact that you could go decades as a baseball organization without naming a captain is cool and it adds to the legacy, mm-hmm. but also why I don't take it as necessary or as important as like a hockey or football captain.
But how, like, you need a captain in football. You need simply to talk to the referee.
Yeah, like quite literally. And that's why in the NHL too, the captain's got to skate over with the penalties.
You quite literally, as you just said, have to talk to the referee when they need to make a decision about a penalty or whatever it is that is if they don't go to the coach. So you have to have a captain. In baseball, you only have one if you're captain worthy. And most teams, they don't have captains because most teams don't have players that are captain worthy. I mean, think about it.
You probably just had the best explanation for this anybody's ever given to me because I've had this take for a long time, and even with my own guys.
Right.
You're right. There's a literal, tangible necessity on a football field or on the ice.
Yes.
There's not a tangible necessity on baseball, but that's what makes it special.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
All right. I could live with that.
I especially
more
like,
than live with it.
I especially like it. Like to Connor's point here, and this is why I was a little critical when it was Aaron Judge, because I think King Aaron Judge or Captain Aaron Judge is that I feel like
I'm just going to put $100 in for this week.
Put me down for
no doubt
$200. I don't think the best player should be the captain. It's usually the leader, the scrappy guy, the Thurman Munson. Right.
So in theory, well, Connor
Thurman Munson was better than a scrappy guy.
No, you know what I mean.
Can become their best player. And Lindor can still be, and probably will still be, their captain.
I just wonder if it would bother Soto a little bit that he's not the captain of the team.
I don't know.
In fact, if this was planned that long, maybe that's why he wasn't smiling the first 2 months. Maybe he knew.
That's why there's been no shuffling.
Maybe they all did.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, today to take your calls on this situation.
Today at 11 o'clock-ish, we should have Terry Collins in studio as we start the conversation about David Wright and drive down memory lane with David Wright having his number retired Saturday by the Mets. So it'll be an exciting week. You got the premiere of The Right Way on SNY tomorrow night. We'll have plenty of other Mets guests. We should have David Wright joining us on Friday as well. So looking forward to talking with TC coming up in about a half hour or so from now. Now, as for the Alonzo stuff, before we get back to the calls, 888-808-119 and the almost All-Stars game last night. See, this is a reason why you get aggravated with it. And this is not a Met Homer thing. Trust me, I couldn't care less about the All-Star Game MVP or the almost All-Stars Game MVP. But you're telling me that Pete Alonso, who played the game, hit a three-run homer in the game, not some swing-off, didn't deserve the MVP honors? Kyle Schwarber did because of his three swings in the swing-off? Come on, man. By the way, I didn't realize until last night, I saw somebody on social media after Alonso hit his home run, only the third Met ever to hit a home run in an All-Star game. Lee Mazzilli, I think it was 79, Mazzilli, David Wright in 2006. David Wright, I mean, the last Met to do it in 2006, and then Alonso last night, but which is pretty cool, I guess. You have a player on your team hitting a home run. Even with the A's, like Rooker hitting a bomb last night, first A to do it since Terry Steinbach in 1988. I never really think about those things, but it's pretty cool when you have your organization, have somebody representing the almost All-Stars game hitting a home run. But Alonso was robbed. So Soto was robbed of being an All-Star by Major League Baseball and the voters. And then Alonso was robbed of the All-Star game MVP. Now, I really don't care about it, so I'm not going to get worked up, but come on. It's ridiculous. This is why you got to boycott these things. The almost All-Stars game. Willie is calling from Howard Beach. What's up, Willie?
Yo, Sal, what's going on, my boy?
How are you,
Willie? I never, I'm chilling. I tried to call like a couple of weeks back. We got disconnected. You know, I never disagree with you, Sal. Now I half agree with you, half disagree. Let me tell you. First of all, Pete got robbed. But here's the thing about the almost all-star game. Juan Soto was almost an all-star. And what I mean by that is you're saying it's not an all-star game unless all the stars are there. Right. I agree. He finished the season like an all-star. He went into the offseason an all-star. He got the all-star contract, but we didn't get the all-star performance out the gate. Now, he got off to a hot swing, but, you know, I feel like that got held against him. And while we're talking baseball and the game and as baseball fans, let's think about what he said publicly. He was more upset about the money, which is disgraceful. It's like me going to Petco and rounding it off to the nearest dollar to donate to AFC.
But Willie, let me ask you something. Let's have a real conversation here, man to man. Willie to Sal. Okay, this is going to be fun. Do you think that Juan Soto is the lone player that cares primarily about the money?
No, but I think you said no Soto, no Sal, so I'm just keeping it on the topic.
Well, no, I understand that, but you said you didn't like hearing Soto talk about the money. But
I thought that was, and I'm a diehard Mets fan.
Understood, but whether you're a Mets fan or Yankee fan, I can understand if you don't like hearing some player, in this case Soto, talk about the money.
It's not the love of baseball. First of all, you just got $765 million, not the Willie, pockets, right?
Understood, okay, but
so
Willie.
You should be more upset as a baseball player? But you should be more upset you're not in the All-Star game.
But would you rather, Willie, understood, but let me ask you. Would you rather hear Soto be open and honest about how he feels about the money, or would you rather hear the bull crap from most other players saying it's about representing the team, blah, 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 blah? You want to believe it. No, you want to believe
it. When you put it like that, I respect his honesty.
Well,
but now,
there
let me,
you go.
Here's my rebuttal, Sal. You have a daughter, and congratulations on your house in New Jersey. We haven't spoke. Listen, if your daughter's in a school play and she doesn't have a talking role, you and your wife ain't going to support? Of course you saw, right?
No.
Now, your
no.
daughter was almost an
Willie,
all-star, but she didn't.
Willie, you, first of all,
you're
Willie.
You're still going to support, Sal. Come
Willie,
on.
I love you. Seriously.
I'm surprised you didn't watch, Mo. I'm real surprised at you, Sal.
No Soto, no Sal, Willie. And I love you. Thanks for the call. Great passion. Make sure you get back to us. Now, you bring up the, if Sammy was in school, what are my daughter, Sammy? And I was just getting a text from my wife during the first break. Like, this is what I need to be hit with today. And during the first break. Come on. I'm trying to do something here. Trying to entertain. The almost All-Stars game. No Soto, no Sal. And I'm getting a text about Sammy's dance school. Sent an email. She's about to start dance, like, for the first time. I want to discuss this later tonight. We need to register her ASAP. She would start in December. Recital in June. So, Willie, when you ask me if there were a play or something and my daughter didn't have a talking part, you know what my response would be? No Sammy, no Sal. No Sammy, no Sal. She ain't talking, I ain't leaving. She ain't starting, I ain't departing. No Soto, no Sal, no Sammy, no Sal. And you can have an issue with Soto's comments, that's fine. I understand that, I respect it. But I'm just telling you that at least he was honest. Where all these other guys are full of crap. They're about the money too. They just don't want to say it. And you're playing right into it. Oh, look at that. So-and-so loves representing our team. And he loves the All-Star bonus. At least Soto said it. And if you want to enjoy the almost All-Stars game, you could do that. There's so many wrongs even with the almost All-Stars game. I can't get into it. I'm sorry. How many wrongs do we need? Soto should have been an all-star, number one. The home run derby should be done the way the swing off is done. That's number two. If you are, in fact, going to have a home run derby, maybe you get the best, I don't know, this is just call me crazy, home run hitters in the sport to participate in it. If you are going to have an all-star game, you should not only have the best players in the game participate in it, you should have those players play throughout the course of the day. Like the better players play the majority of the game. Not a scripted thing to get everybody in. And then if you are going to have a swing off, you need to do it with the best home run hitters. And they're not there. Oh, and by the way, if you're going to name an MVP of the game, maybe do it based off of something that happened. Again, this is just crazy talk. Like, I know Manfred belongs in the Hall of Fame, and little old me, I'm just a washed up talk show host that'll probably lose his job when Craig Carton comes back. What do I know? But if you're going to give out an All-Star game MVP, maybe have it from something that happened in the actual game. And by the way, I'm not worried about Craigie coming back. I told it to his face. You can come back all you want. Years ago. Whenever he came back in over the last, you can come back all you want. You're taking my spot. Steve is calling from Mayapack. What's up, Steve?
What's up, Sal?
How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Listen, I normally agree with you on a lot of things. I can't get behind. I can get behind your sentiment. I cannot get behind. It just seems very condescending. You talk about how you're banned. You're not watching. No Sal. No Soto. No Sal.
Yes, boycotting. Yeah.
You're going to talk for the next. Yeah, you're going to talk for the next 3 hours about it. You woke up this morning licking your chops to get to the get to the highlights. You're checking social media during the game. You weren't that busy on a Tuesday night that you could have just sat down, suck it up, and watched the game.
I wanted to watch the game, Steve. I wanted to watch the game. Come Sometimes on. You got to stand up for something in life.
You owe the people. You're a sports personality. We want to hear your opinion.
I'm giving you my opinion.
Behind your fire. You didn't even watch the game.
I watched the condensed version of it. I know all the talking points better. Well, Steve, you're worried about the wrong things. I don't need to watch the stupid game. I watched the condensed version of it. I didn't want to. I boycotted.
You are worried about the game because you're talking about it the last 40 minutes. You're going to talk about it for the next 3 hours.
I'm not going to talk about it for the next 3 hours. I can promise you
yes,
that. I already told you, Terry Collins coming in studio at 11 o'clock. We're going to talk a lot of David Wright. I'll ask him about it.
My man.
Yeah, no,
I love
Steve,
you,
all good. I love you, too, and I appreciate you calling. And you guys can call me out on that. That's fine. Believe me. I told you this yesterday. This is me being honest with you. I do not lie to you. I'm being honest. I wanted to watch the All-Stars game. I love Major League Baseball. Love it. My favorite sport. Grew up loving the All-Star game. This year was the year I was looking forward most to watching the All-Star game. For years, it's fallen off. I've been to two, as a matter of fact. I went to the one at Yankee Stadium in 2008, and I went to the one at Citi Field in 2013. And I enjoyed it. It's a fun event. The Home Run Derby, the All-Star game, all that stuff. If you're there, the Home Run Derby is fun, even though it should be changed and all those different things. This year, I wanted to watch because there were New York ties, plenty of them. Lindor starting, Judge starting, Alonso an all-star, Diaz, Peterson, Jazz, Rodon, Boone, our guy Boone, Joe Torre, and the fact that they were wearing the old uniforms or their proper uniforms. So there's a lot of appeal. I could not get behind. I'm actually shocked. When I first started the boycotting thing, I said it as a joke on Baseball Night New York because I assumed that in the coming days, this is when the first announcements came out last week, I assume that in the following days, Soto is going to be named as a replacement. How can these idiots not have the biggest star, one of the biggest stars in the All-Star game? Can't happen. So I was like, I'm boycotting the game unless Soto's named. Assuming he was going to get named. And then he didn't. And it made me even more mad. And then once I said the no Soto, no Sal, I got to stick by that. So you're right, I had nothing better to do last night. Sat down on the couch. I was listening to my wife babble for 15 minutes before we finally put the TV on. That's great. And believe me, I would have killed to watch the All-Star game. Can't do it. TV finally goes on. What's the first thing I hear? Whoever the Fox announcer was, Joe Davis, whatever it is. I'm like, no. Gotta stay. Would you rather me come on here and lie to you? I can't do that. No Soto, no Sal. I boycott it. But I also have a job to do. So I made sure I knew what was going on and all the talking points for the game. And this morning I got up early, 6:30 a.m. Not only because I wanted to watch the condensed game, which took me 20 minutes, but also because I had to put the robot in the pool because my wife's friends are coming over. Not that I would get to enjoy it, but she will. I want to see a couple of spiders hanging out at the bottom of the pool. Get the robot going. But I'm on top of it. I know all the talking points. The nonsense with the swing off, the nonsense with Alonso getting robbed, the nonsense that it's an almost All-Stars game with no Soto, nonsense that even with the swing off, you get the best players not participating in it because they're out of here because they're on vacation, leaving the game early. I got it. But you could call and give your opinion about it. That's the beauty of what we do. I want to hear from you and your thoughts on it. You know mine. What are your thoughts on it? We've had almost everybody on that you could possibly have, except the man himself, until now. David Wright joins us. David, we know it's an extremely busy week. We appreciate you taking a few minutes. How are you feeling with the big day tomorrow?
My man, thanks for having me. Is that your ringtone that we came into? Is that a...
Yeah, I used to go to sleep to that in 06 and 07.
What a wonderful weekend. I mean, I appreciate you having me. You know, you're the best. So this is the cherry on top.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you're too kind. Now, I like Brass Monkey myself, but I figured, you know, with the number 5 being retired, that was more appropriate for today, no?
Right, agreed. But I also like Brass Monkey better.
That was kind of
the OG. You know, we kind of played around with some things, but I appreciate the look.
All right. So, has the magnitude of what's going to happen tomorrow sunk in yet?
Absolutely not. And that's been the toughest question, is that whether it's family or friends, you know, like, how do you feel? And it's such a hard question, because it's like, I don't know how I'm going to feel until you get in the moment. I mean, there's part of me that, you know, I'm incredibly nervous. I'll say that. And it kind of takes a lot, you know, to get me nervous. I've been in some kind of pressure packed situations in my career, but this is, you know, beyond my comfort zone. So incredibly nervous, incredibly excited, I think would be, the second feeling, and then humbled. I mean, it's just it's crazy to think that when I look up there, that number 5 will be next to Keith Hernandez and Mike Piazza and Daryl Strawberry and Don Good. I mean, these are guys like I used to try to emulate Daryl's swing in my backyard. I used to sit on getaway days when we'd travel during the season and talk shop with Keith Hernandez about what he saw from the booth compared to, you know, what I saw from the playing field. And then, you know, obviously being a teammate and a friend of Mike's, and then to cap it all off next to, you know, Mr. Seaver. I mean, it's just like, it's this crazy moment where, you know, I think I mentioned this before that, you know, I feel like it's going to be like one big prank, like where, you know, Howie's up there about to introduce me, then he'll look at me and be like, gotcha, you know, and everybody will laugh. And it's just like, it's this surreal feeling.
You know, David, I didn't fully appreciate it in real time the way that I do now. And I had a special chance to do that watching The Right Way, the special that premiered last night on SNY. I know you were at a screener. Have you seen it before? You saw it last night with your family and friends in attendance? Have you seen it before that?
So they sent us the link, and I purposely didn't watch it. My wife did, and, you know, I could see her, like, tearing up, and I was like, oh, boy, you know, I'm in for, you know, and because I don't consider myself an emotional person, but I feel like every cool thing that's happened, you know, from my last game on, like, I tend to start tearing up. I'm getting more emotional the older I get. So I purposely did not see it. My parents watched it. They, you know, raved about it. Molly, my wife, watched it, raved about it. But that was the first time I had seen it at the screening.
It was fantastic. And I got a little chance to see Joe Krause and SNY did a tremendous job with it. They talked to a ton of different people, obviously yourself, your family included. But it gave me a different appreciation for not just your career, but your life. And you could talk about your number being up there with Keith and Doc and Daryl. But when I think of the New York Mets, David, all these years later after watching that, for me, it's the franchise, Tom Seaver, and it's you. And you're the only one of them, including Seaver, that has played their entire career with the Mets. That has to mean something extra special to you.
I mean, somebody asked me earlier, like, what's the greatest accomplishment, you know, that you could say post-career? And for me, it was, you know, starting as a Met, ending as a Met. And, you know, for me, it's this mindset of once a Met, always a Met. And I think that it means the world to me. And I think that's what resonates mostly with the fan base. And that's why we have such an organic relationship and such a special relationship, is that, you know, you mentioned the documentary. My father was a police officer. My mother drove our school bus. I come from a very blue collar, bring your lunch pail to work type community. And that's what Mets fans are. And I think they saw that. We wanted the same things. And, you know, when they would take losses, you know, tough in the stands, they saw me taking the losses tough. And you know, we got each other. And I think that's what made this connection extra special. You know, because there's certainly been better players, you know, to put the uniform on, better numbers, you know, just better overall baseball players. But I don't think, you know, the connection that I have with this city and this fan base is special. And there's not too many athletes in any sport that can say that.
Well, that's the thing. We're talking with David Wright, obviously the man of the hour. He'll have his number 5 retired forever tomorrow out at Citi Field. In real time, I'm thinking, all right, Piazza or Beltran, or as a young kid growing up watching Straw or Doc. But the culmination of everything that you were, the love that you had for this fan, or for this team, this organization, even before you played for them, the way you represented the New York Mets through the ups and the downs, the way you carried yourself. Oh, and by the way, the performance. And maybe if not for some injuries, maybe it could have been a Hall of Fame career, which some would argue, and I think I would be in that boat, that you could be a Hall of Famer anyway. But I think the greatest thing that separates you, and I've been saying this all week, is your character, the way you handled yourself. And really, maybe they should be retiring your dad's number, keeping that ass in check all these years.
Well, that's funny, because that's, you know, I think you mentioned in the documentary, but I can remember, like it was yesterday, we went to, he was still an active police officer, and they invited me to this, I'm not sure what it was, a luncheon or something, and they were asking us questions, like me, baseball questions, and then finally somebody asked my dad, you know, how'd you raise a Major League Baseball player? You know, and he kind of thought for a second, and I thought he gave the best answer that anybody could give. He goes, I never thought about raising a Major League Baseball player. I've thought about raising a good person. And that's kind of stuck with me. And they would be the first ones. I typically, in the off season, I'd go back to Virginia, you know, and that's where I kind of regrounded myself each off season, is that, you know, I'd start really feeling like the, you know, that the celebrity aspect that can come along with being a New York Met or a New York athlete. And I'd get home and I'd start kind of, you know, maybe treating people a little different or carrying myself a little different. And my dad and my mom and my three brothers would immediately chop me down and not allow me to do that. So, yeah, I'm very, very thankful for that.
All right, let's go over some specific moments. There's a ton I want to get to here. We're talking with David Wright. First home run at Citi Field. I remember being there was a huge deal, brand new ballpark. And that year, I'm thinking you're going to win the MVP. I really doubled down, triple down, whatever. Wright's going to win the MVP. And waiting for those big moments, down three runs, you hit the big three-run homer to tie the game. The ballpark was going nuts. Obviously, it didn't work out the way that we thought with that ballpark not really being a great fit for you. But take me through that.
Well, you can't win the MVP hitting 10 homers?
My fantasy team was a bust. What happened there, David? Actually, we were just talking about that with Satin before. We had your buddy Josh Satin in studio for a couple hours, and he was saying, like, the frustrating thing could be you hammer the ball, you do everything the right way, hitting it to right center field, and it's an out. So then that 0-for-1 can hang with you, turn to 0-for-2, whatever. But mm-hmm. That moment, though, you still had a great moment in Citi Field. It's history. Hey, other guys will hit home runs in the World Series. Nobody's ever going to hit the first home run in Citi Field. Take me through that.
Or the first home run in Citi Field history.
Well, you know,
I got both those.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The first home run in Citi Field history from a Met perspective, that was a big moment with that new ballpark.
Of course. And, you know, I kind of, it was a little foreshadowing at that moment because that was, you know, I hit that ball really, really hard. And, you know, I didn't typically like to pimp things too much, but I kind of pimped that one because I knew I got it. And I kind of watched it a little bit and it was like two rows deep. And I was like, oh boy. You know, this might be a little more of a challenge than I thought. But I think Josh makes a good point that, you know, as a hitter, you obviously, you know, you love playing in the Philadelphias and the Yankee stadiums and the, you know, the Cincinnati ballparks, you know, but, you know, what I tried to use to my advantage at Citi Field at the beginning was to, you know, hit the ball in the gaps, you know, doubles, you know, become a better overall hitter. And I think, you know, I should have done a better job in retrospect of kind of sticking to that game plan as opposed to like worrying too much about the, you know, the power numbers.
All right. And then the All-Star game in 2013, I'm just going to kind of try to go through this as quickly as you can in some mm-hmm. sequential order. And I'll leave out, David, don't worry about it. I'll leave out the 07 collapse or the 06 postseason or 08 because there was a lot of great moments after that. We all know that. But the All-Star game, because now even looking back, and I was at that All-Star game again, big deal, the Mets hosting the All-Star game. And I see the excitement that you had to be able to receive that first pitch from Tom Seaver, and you gave it a little, you caught it, you hopped and ran up to him and gave him the, you know, the handshake and the hug. And now you look and see the 41 up there. Tomorrow the 5 will be up there. That was a great freaking moment. What was that like for you catching the first pitch of the All-Star game in 2013 from Seaver?
Oh man, incredible. And what made it even better was Mr. Seaver asked if I could catch it, which is, you know, mind blowing to me because I can remember the first time I met him. You know, it was like we used to call it the welcome home dinner. So we'd play our first home game and then we'd have like a charity dinner that night with typically an off day afterwards. And, you know, Mr. Seaver walks up and he goes, "Hey, kid." And I like kind of look around. I'm like, "Me?" And he goes, "Yeah, you." So I go over and like kind of run over to him and he's like, "Tom Seaver." I was like, I know who you are, Mr. Seaver, you know, David Wright. And he goes, "I know who you are." And I was like, "What?" And I thought it was like so cool. And then he goes, and I just want to tell you, between the two of us, we have 311 wins. And I like had to think about it for a second. I was like, you're right, Mr. Seaver. We do have 311 wins between the two of us. And he started laughing. And we actually formed a tremendous relationship where he, you know, would randomly call me, or when he was in town doing something, he'd ask if I could meet for lunch. And we'd just talk shop and talk life, you know, away from the baseball field. And it became this really cool relationship that has now grown into, you know, the entire Seaver family. And one of my biggest regrets is, you know, Mr. Seaver used to invite me to his vineyard each year after the season. And I was young and didn't know anything about wine, didn't drink wine. And I always kind of made up something, not made up something, but found a reason not to go. And I wish I would have taken him up on that offer.
Oh, man, that's tough to hear, Dave. Come on, man.
I know.
You ever have the bottle of his wine? I heard his, I think TC maybe has one. I want to get one myself. The bottle of Seaver wine there. I was waiting to get it and maybe pop it during the Mets World Series win, but we haven't had that happen in quite some time.
Obviously. Yes, yes. So for big occasions for me and my wife, I've become a wine drinker. So for big occasions now, which the wine is terrific, but just as importantly are the, you know, when we break open a bottle, I'll start thinking of, you know, different memories with Mr. Seaver or his family, or, you know, different cool Mets moments. So we tend to break out a bottle on special occasions, which is, you know, for me, kind of comes full circle from not knowing anything about it and, you know, being so excited to meet, you know, Mr. Seaver to now, you know, enjoying his wine, but also, you know, kind of reminiscing about those memories.
And always having that moment, obviously, in the 2013 All-Star game. We're talking with David Wright here on The Fan. We had TC on Wednesday, and he told me something that I did not know. Obviously, we knew you were named captain. I didn't know that he wanted to name you the captain, and before you accepted, you went around to all the teammates and asked them if that would have been okay. Take me through being named the captain with that.
Well, I actually had, you know, I wanted to make sure that when I got called in the office with ownership, the front office, the coaching staff, that, you know, they said, we'd like to name you captain. And I said, you know, that, trust me, like, I'm humbled. Like, this is, you know, an amazing gesture, you know, but it won't mean nearly as much unless those guys in the clubhouse feel the same way. So I asked them, you know, to go guy to guy, whether it was, you know, Bartolo Colon or whoever had been in the league forever, or, you know, a rookie, you know, make sure that they view me in this light. And if they don't, you know, go to, you know, so-and-so, not me, go to so-and-so and let them know so that it, you know, they don't feel awkward telling me this. And because I truly wanted, you know, the support of the clubhouse and the backing of the clubhouse just as much as I wanted the backing of, you know, the organization as a whole.
All right. Well, that's a great thing, obviously, being named captain. I mean, Captain America, there's too much to get to in just this short 20-minute interview. That's why you got to watch The Right Way on SNY. It was tremendous going over all of this. But I wanted to get to that because it kind of led to my favorite part. Now, 06 was great, and you talked about how at the time, you know, the famous image of you and Reyes with the cigars and the champagne, thinking like that's the beginning. But obviously, it didn't end the way that you wanted in 06 and then 07 and so on, and then dealing with the other stuff with Citi Field and some of the injuries.
I thought you weren't going to bring that up. You said you weren't going to bring that up. You just brought it up again.
I'm sorry.
So over this conversation, you said you weren't going to bring it up, which is bringing it up, and then you brought it up again, post not bringing it up.
That is true. I am. It is, unfortunately, it's part of the story, but it's part of what makes the next part, David, so rewarding. And you talked about this in the doc, where to me, even as a fan, it was more gratifying seeing you come back. Like my, it gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Dude, the home run you hit in Philly when you first came back, and you humble TC says, you went to him and said, don't put me in the top of the line, put me wherever, Skip, I just want to contribute. He's like, you're hitting third. And then you get up there in that first at bat, and you hit maybe the biggest no-doubter of your career in Philadelphia that night.
Yes, you know, I wasn't known for, you know, that kind of power, but that's about as good as I can hit a baseball. And I think, you know, on a, you know, a level of feeling comfortable, like the team was rolling, you know, at the deadline, Sandy did a great job of getting a couple of third basemen, Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe, that were playing well over at third. So I didn't want to mess anything up when I got off the DL. You know, so I told Terry, I said, Terry, play me against lefties, you know, pinch hit me against lefties, you know, hit me eighth, you know, wherever you think that I can help this team win. You know, and he goes, I'm glad you came in and told me that because you're hitting third tonight. And I was like, all right, well, here we go. And you know, to do that, because I stunk in my minor league rehab assignment. Like, these 18 and 19-year-old kids must have thought, if they looked at the back of my baseball card, they would have said, making an all-star team is easy. I should be on the all-star team, because they were blowing things by me, and I was playing so poorly. you know, an A ball during my minor league rehab assignment. So to kind of get that good one on the barrel in Philadelphia kind of allowed me to exhale, take a deep breath, and be like, okay, I can contribute to this winning team.
And then the fist pump. Murph talked about that as being his favorite David Wright moment. We had Murph on earlier where you scored from first against the Nationals, that euphoric fist pump. I'm sure there was a lot of emotion, not just in that game itself, but all the work that you had to do to come back from injury to get back in there.
So, yeah, that was really neat in that, you know, my back was obviously, like, bothering me, and I didn't know day-to-day how my back was going to respond to playing. And I hadn't really, like, in these minor league games, you kind of exert yourself to the point where you know that your body can handle it. You never overexert it, and you know, just as a protective measure. And that was kind of the first time that I can remember, you know, a big situation, Cespedes hits it in the gap in right center, and I'm on first base, and I was like, I got to score. Like, this could ice the game here. So I really, like, took it into that final gear that I had, which I hadn't done before, and I barely beat the throw to the plate, and just, you know, this, like, pent-up aggression of all this rehab and all this, you know, these frustrations over the past few months kind of come to fruition, and I just gave it, like, a, you know, a great fist pump and you know, kind of let out a lot of emotion, which I typically didn't do.
And then obviously where, you know, in 06, you fell short. Again, I bring it up, but just to tell the story and make it more important here, you get to the freaking World Series. After all that you went through, David, all you went through with the injuries and the hard work coming back in 2015, contributing to the team, being a big part of it when you did come back, to hitting a World Series home run at Citi Field. Was that your career highlight?
Yes, no doubt. I mean, because it's every kid's fantasy to be in their backyard and have their, you know, dad or grandfather, whoever, pitching to them and pretending it's the World Series. And then, you know, the wiffle ball comes in and whack, you know, I get hit a home run in the World Series. And to be able to live that out in real life, especially knowing that, you know, in the back of my mind that the end was kind of near for me physically. Very rarely as an athlete do you get to soak in the moment. It's always on to the next challenge. And I remember myself rounding the bases at Citi Field and, like, kind of looking up and telling myself, you know, soak this in, because there's a good chance, you know, not only is this going to be one of your favorite moments of your life, you know, but you're probably never going to get this opportunity again. So I remember, like, you know, looking up at the crowd and then looking up at my family where they were sitting in the seats and just trying for a split second to just soak it in.
One thing that I learned from watching the documentary The Right Way, you could catch it on SNY, was that I don't want to say that there was regret. You might have used that word, but there seemed to be at least a little sadness and maybe some regret about the play that you got injured on, because you played all out all the time, which is one of the reasons why you were the player that you were and one of the reasons why Met fans loved you. But thinking in the moment, and it's a logical thought, like, hey, maybe if I didn't one time play all out, and what's the big deal? The run scores, and maybe I'm able to have a Hall of Fame career or play, you know, 4 or 5 more years, whatever it may be. Take me through the thought process there, and when did it hit you that that was the case? Because you were just going pedal to the metal your whole career, then that injury happens, and then maybe some regret on that one play with Carlos Lee trying to run and tag him at third.
Yeah, I mean, I always took a lot of pride in playing hard and having a sixth sense, because as I mentioned, I wasn't nearly as talented as a lot of teammates and opponents that I played with and against, but I felt like my sixth sense on a baseball field was, you know, pretty upper tier. So I always was proud of being in the right place at the right time. So on the Carlos Lee play, it was a broken play. We had a shift on, you know, it was an errant throw, and, you know, like I was excited that I was in the right place at the right time, backing up, you know, a throw from the second baseman to the shortstop on a double play. You know, if I had just stayed at third base, maybe that ball rolls in the outfield, Carlos Lee probably scores, and we give up one run. Is that the end of the world? Maybe, maybe not. But in the moment, it's the end of the world. It's every run is life or death. And I remember a coach pulling me aside. I had a play in Seattle. Pedro was pitching. I think it was in 05. And Raul Banez had a pop-up into foul territory. And, like, I jumped in the stands, caught the ball, and hit my side, and I had this bruise from, like, my rib cage down to my ankle from landing on a chair. And a coach pulled me aside and is like, David, you can't play this way. You're not going to have a long career. And I honestly told him, I was like, I don't know how to not try to catch the ball. You know what I mean? Like, if the ball's there, I'm going to try to catch it. And the Carlos Lee play is the same thing. You know, in retrospect, if I could have, you know, taken one play off, and said, you know what, let it go into left field and let Carlos Lee score, you know, could I sign up for that right now? Of course. You know, I probably would do that. But, you know, the mindset of, you know, playing third base and trying to win every ball and every out kind of overcomes mentally what you're thinking a lot of times. And I took a lot of pride in that.
And I think even from a fan's perspective, a lot of times looking back on your career, it was, man, what could have been or what if? But in reality, it should be what was. I mean, you play in the World Series, you hit a home run in the World Series, you won gold gloves, you had the individual statistics, and now here we are, David, culminating your career with having your number five retired as the only New York Met ever to have his number retired that played his entire career. Hey, it could have been Hall of Fame, maybe it will one day, who knows, but you know what? You've had a damn good baseball life, and I think it's a very happy ending for your career.
Oh, I mean, I would have laughed at you, and you know, I probably would have gotten the biggest chuckle of all time if you would have told me, geez, if you would have told me when I was 21 that we'd be having this conversation right now. But surely if you would have told me when I was 15, 10 years old that, you know, we'd even be discussing this right now, I would have told you you're crazy. So, you know, it's for me, the goal was always, there wasn't All-Star Games. Obviously, it's to win a championship. It wasn't All-Star Games. It wasn't gold gloves. The goal for me was to try to maximize my potential, like reach my ceiling. You know, in scouts terms, you always have a floor and a ceiling. I wanted to reach my ceiling, and it wasn't because of talent. There was some God-given talent there for sure, but it was because of work ethic. It was because of desire. It was because I wanted it more. When I took the field, I always put my head down before I took the field for the first time, and I'd tell myself, didn't matter who we were playing against. You know, you name the Hall of Fame player. We could be playing against Babe Ruth for all I care. I would say, you know what? Be the best player tonight. You're the most prepared player out here tonight, and you want it more than anybody else here tonight. And that was kind of the little pep talk I gave to myself before every game.
And I'm told that talent, unfortunately, does not transfer over to the golf course where Satin and Murph own you and Zimmerman. Is that accurate?
We try to, you know, with my bad back and all, we try to figure out like a couple rounds a year, and Murph and Satin have been taking it to us. Now, let me tell you this. They won't play us straight up. They ask for strokes.
Yeah.
So that just means that they're probably the biggest sandbagger cheaters that don't put in their good scores to get a real index. So, you know, you can tell Satin and Murphy both that.
David, you're the man. Best of luck tomorrow. Look forward to being on hand. Everybody's going to be out there excited for it. Well-earned, well-deserved honor. Can't wait for it. Congratulations, David. Thank you for your time.
You're the best. Thanks for having me. That was a lot of fun.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.